And welcome to the June 15th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. We've gathered experts to talk tech today and answer any questions you might have in the field. In the studios of KCSD with me in Sioux Falls, Matt Guru and Joel Brovelite. Hi, Joel.
Hey, how are you doing?
I am wonderful. Wonderful. It's getting a little close out there, as they say. Yeah. Otherwise, a fantastic day. Jeff Litterick joins us from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre on the phone. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello.
How's your day in Pierre today so far?
I'm a busy, but a good day. It's getting to the end of fiscal year, so it's always a busy time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we'll talk a little bit about Pierre in a little bit. It made one of those, you've seen those things on the internet. They're the, how does your state rank, you know, worst to best, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, this is actually, there's a couple of those we're going to talk about today that have to do with tech, and I thought they were pretty interesting, and they come from fairly reliable sources. They aren't just weird sources. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. But this is a listener interactive program. If you have a question, we'll try to provide that answer. If you still tolerate Facebook, the page is simply facebook.com/techradio. Pasted a link there this morning to a press release from the School of Mines that we're going to talk about later in the show, encouraging some STEM participation in young kids, particularly girls, but it'll work for everyone. And we will we'll go there a little bit later. Again, facebook.com/techradio. You can post your comments, your questions there. Don't be shy. You can text us, 956-SDPB, that's 956-7372, and our phone number is 800-524-3604 if you'd like to actually call us. Most people just email. It's inthemoment@sdpb.org. Pretty simple. Jot us a note, and we would love to talk about any topics that might be on your mind. Well, today, I think we're going to probably talk a little bit about E3, wrap up WWDC. We'll start out with the big merger. It did not take long after the government said that they could merge for AT&T to complete its acquisition of Time Warner. It took just hours, actually, after the Justice Department decided not to request a legal delay. Joel, you think this is a good thing?
Well,
not blocking the deal?
Yeah, I mean, I think... The merger between the two is not exactly the same as a lot of other mergers. So, you know, they talk about a horizontal merger versus a vertical merger, and this is one of those where two companies that really, while they may compete kind of on the margins, they don't really compete vertically. Meaning, AT&T does, you know, phone and wireless, whereas Comcast does TV and content. So the two together probably have a good chance to compete against, you know, a few of the other big behemoths that are out there. And while it does make kind of its own thing out there, it makes it a lot more comparable to a company like Verizon. So I don't know. I don't think that there was a huge deal on that. I don't think the judge would have approved it if it had seemed all suspect, but it seemed pretty straightforward, like there's absolutely no reason to block this.
So to put a little finer point on it, everybody knows AT&T, you know, cell phones and regular phones and other things, but what they bought with the acquisition of Time Warner was Warner Brothers, which of course distributes movies and games and titles like that. Turner, the whole Turner system,
mm-hmm.
TBS and I believe CNN's in there. Mm-hmm. And a few others, and then HBO,
right?
Which, you know, is a behemoth upon itself. So
yeah, it is. It's funny though. People talk about HBO being such a behemoth, and it is, but it is on just the content. But you know, I mean, it really isn't even a percentage compared to some of these other companies.
Well, $6 billion.
Yeah. I'm just saying that, like, when you compare it to many of the other companies, it's just a very small slice, and it's an important one. Don't get me wrong, but HBO is not the same as saying, you know, they're going to take over. It's not like they're absorbing Netflix, for instance.
No, not really. And just again, to put the finer point on it, $32 billion is about what Warner Brothers, Turner, and HBO are valued at, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
And what'd they buy it for? $85 billion is what the actual deal went through. So interestingly enough, we'll see all the bees come out, but Jeff, any thoughts? So they reserve the right to appeal the case to try to break the government did to try to break it up later at a later date. So they reserve the right to break it up later, but they let it go through.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. It's hard to break up later. I mean, everyone remembers AT&T and the mail and the Bell monopoly and stuff was broken up, but it gets a little hard unless you just, you know, then sell off entire divisions and stuff. So I'm not quite sure how that would work in practice. So
it sounds messy to me, but we get to live it here for a while and see what happens. Yeah. All right.
The other
Another
big
news.
News
yeah. Go ahead.
On base of that, is Comcast has now reoffered their deal for 20th Century Fox to block the Disney deal and take over based off this court ruling that if the government wasn't going to block this one, Comcast, they would have blocked the Comcast-Fox deal, and Comcast and Disney are kind of getting to a war over 20th Century Fox, so we'll see how that happens now, too.
Okay, so a couple of more media mergers possibly down the line. We wrapped up E3 this week. Jeff, have you been following that at all?
Yes and no. It's been kind of, I watched the major press releases, and there's a lot of very mad people at Sony right now for a couple of things. There's a few good games coming out. I really didn't get too much into the breadth of many of the games, though, that were announced at the opening ceremony. So,
what was the upset with Sony?
Well, you probably heard of a little game called Fortnite.
Yes, it's
on everybody now, and Sony of everybody. This includes PC, Xbox, Microsoft, the Nintendo Switch. It just came out on Nintendo Switch, and a lot of PS4 people now got upset because their accounts won't work on the Switch. Sony is blocking even though it's a free game, your account from working on any other platform. So you have to have a PS4 account, and then you can have an account that works on everybody else's platform. And the problem that comes with that is your account is tied to your progression and all this stuff. So basically, if you have a PS4, you have to start all over if you want to play on any other device the same game. And you can't play with other people that you can on the other platform. So when you are a game as big as Fortnite with millions upon millions of players now, and someone estimated that almost 40% of the players are playing on the PS4 and the Switch at the same time, but you can't move between them and keep all your goodies, that's making people pretty mad.
Why would they do such a marketing blunder such as that?
Sony has always done this. Most people will get into this too much because it's not like Fortnite with millions of players. Sony, if you're on the PS4, they do not allow any what's called cross-platform play. You cannot do it on anything. So they were hoping Sony would relent this time because Sony, every time they always block this, they always come, we'll talk about it, but they never release the blocks. So unlike Xbox, where you can play cross-platform, and Nintendo Switch, which allows some cross-platform, the PS4 is a closed ecosystem, and Sony likes it that way. And this has not been the newest in a whole line of games they've done this to. The problem is this one is a big game, has big impact on a ton of people that own PS4. So we'll have to watch the development, but I don't think Sony's going to change their mind on this one.
Wow. Again, folks, if you're interested in the gaming scene, all those press conferences that tied with E3 are over with now, and you can kind of go in and do a little searching on the web and see what's best, what's worst, predictions for doing some gaming if you're into that this summer. Lots of titles, big titles coming out. Not only
lots
the summer,
of teasers too for the humongous, you know, what we call the class AA titles, like Elder Scrolls, the new Elder Scrolls and stuff. They were all teased Fallout 76 was teased once again, and that's actually, if you pre-order, you can get into beta here fairly soon. That's supposed to be out this Christmas, but I was kind of surprised at what a humongous big announcements. There were a lot of teasers, especially for the games I tend to play, that are coming next year. So next year should be a, and the year after that should be pretty big on the big double, Class A titles. So.
Anything coming down the pike, gaming-wise, that's going to change in the next few years as far as user interface, or are the PC folks still going to be using a keyboard and a mouse, and the console gamers still going to be using that kind of goofy-looking thing with the joysticks?
It's still kind of a niche thing, but I'm kind of surprised on how many games are VR now. Especially on the PC for the Oculus. Every time I turn around, there's an older game or a new game that will have both VR and normal support day one. We'll see if that trend continues, but it's a major change. So, I'm it's not every title, but it's a lot of titles are doing VR versions or announcing VR versions of existing hit titles. That's something to watch over the next couple of years, especially as prices of the VR headsets come down. But that seems to be the only major one. I mean, we are looking forward to the next gen of Xbox and PlayStation, the PlayStation 5, we assume. Not sure what the Xbox would call, but those are pretty much, everyone's pretty much sure those are not going to be until 2020 at least now. So we still have a couple more years on our current gen of hardware. The big thing will be next gen and if VR really takes off.
Microsoft is really shifting its focus back to the games now. They had that successful run of hardware, Xbox One and or Xbox One X, and that Elite controller and things. And now they're getting back to focusing almost entirely on, you know, the new Halo and Forza and Battletoads and things like that.
Well, they've also purchased 3 studios in the past year, too, so development studios of games. So they're up to 5 or 6 development studios making games for Microsoft. So at one time, they had sold off almost all their studios, and they're making a big push. They're getting Class A studios back, making Class A games for the Xbox. So that is a big shift, and we'll see how that plays, along with a lot of more free games coming out, too, to play.
That's always good news for me. I like to try it before I buy it, or at least totally free is fine with me. Free to play is fantastic for me. you always get what you put into it, or get what you get out of it, or whatever. Microsoft. So on the operating system side, big patch this week. Big humongous patch. Did they do some fixing of? Some of the earlier leaks that were going on in the processor?
Yeah, I would say it's a humongous box. Patch is an iteration on many patches. There is an important fix for Cortana. Some security researchers found a way that even if you lock your PC, if you had Cortana turned on as your personal assistant, they could actually, through your lock screen, unlock your computer and also change your password from the lock screen. So that was fixed. That's probably the biggest, really security one. Most of the chip
that's
stuff
a little
is
problem.
Kind of little tweaks and stuff. So,
Office is changing subtle changes to Office 365.
With big
supposedly
changes
making,
coming down. So they're as if using Office 365, do be aware that Microsoft is in the process of revamping the entire web-based line into a brand new UI interface. So that's going to take several times, but they're looking at some drastic changes in the future. So
I hope they don't bungle that up like they like the potential is there to do, because the Office 365 product is so convenient. You just go wherever you're at and log in, and you've got access to all your documents and all your you don't have to. The person that you're with doesn't necessarily have to have Word, but you can use the online version of Word and get to all your stuff, or PowerPoint or Excel, or you know, even into SharePoint and Drive and all your files. It's such a seamless sort of product right now. I really hope they don't screw that up.
So. Yeah, considering all the businesses and personal people that use it, we will know if they screw it up fairly quickly. So,
Anyway, what they're talking about is supposedly making it easier for millions of customers. They're going to slim down the ribbon. What they redid the ribbon a while back, and whether you like it or not, they're going to take that down to just one line, and it'll start appearing in other products. That's in Word, but they'll start appearing in other products like Outlook and other places in months to come. But trying to, I guess, give it a little bit lighter look. I don't use all the stuff that you see in that, you know, up in the ribbon all the time. So maybe make it in a cleaner interface will make it better. I don't know. It's supposed to improve the search so you can get to the help you need faster, because I always forget the keystrokes or how to exactly get into the menu I need to get into to do certain things. So if they can improve that and get that going, that probably will make it easier for millions of customers. They can actually live up to that that part of their promise.
And I think part of it is also a speed up for those web users on probably our worst connections, especially like cell phones and MiFis and stuff. Just a total overhaul for usability and speed and everything. So if they do this right, it's going to be a big win. So
get rid of the bloat and make it run faster. That could be awesome. Speaking of awesome, if you have questions or comments today, we would love to hear from you. Again, facebook.com/techradio for that link on some STEM tips that we're going to talk about after the break. You can post your comments or questions there. Our text number, 956-STPB, that's 956-7372, is there for you. And in the moment at stpb.org is the email address. We'll be right back after this. And thank you for sticking with us on In the Moment. We have switched gears successfully and are talking tech with Joel Brovelite here at the campus, the lovely campus of the University of Sioux Falls. And in Peer, Jeff Litterick with the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications. Jeff, you do so many different things with the state as far as security and advice and networking and things. And we appreciate your time greatly on the show. Joel, back to you. We talked a little bit about Microsoft. Let's give Apple its due for the day.
They always get their due. We don't need to. We're always talking about Apple.
Well, you know, it's so,
well, how many?
So
how long has it been? It's been a long time since we talked about Microsoft. So you know, we had to get them in.
We do, especially when there's news.
Right. Totally.
The WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference.
Correct.
Happened shortly after we aired our last show.
Correct. Yeah, I think we aired the show on the 1st, and I believe the keynote for the conference was that following Monday.
Any big surprises?
It depends on who you ask. I think for the general public, it seemed rather ho-hum because they didn't make any new gadgets that they released there, and that's okay. Always disappointing to the general public. Although I have to say, I was expecting a much bigger sense of disappointment than actually turned out. It turned out people were relatively not mad that they didn't make new gadgets.
Okay.
So maybe people are getting tired of buying new gadgets.
Well, it's been, you know, the HomePod thing and I mean,
for sure. Yeah. And one after another, absolutely.
And you got to keep up with the watch and the latest.
Yeah. And there will be plenty of that here coming in the next, 6 months or so. But what they basically did for the conference, what they announced was basically same thing they do every show, but they went in a little more depth. New operating systems for all their devices, whether it's the Apple TV, the Apple Watch, iOS 12 is the new version of that, and their desktop operating system. They kind of that's called macOS Mojave. So all of that is now being tested. If you're a developer, you've already gotten seeds of those, and it'll be open to a public beta test here probably in July-ish if you're one of those people that wants to get in early. Just about anybody can do that, although I'm not sure I'd recommend just about anybody does that. And of course, they're all free updates. That most of them will be coming in the fall or late summer. So be looking for that. Lots of great new features, some things that people wanted, some things that people didn't want. Probably the thing that got the biggest play in the media was Apple announced new controls in the next operating system, iOS 12, that will allow you to not use your phone quite as much, which seems a little backward that the phone company, the the mobile device company is trying to get you to stop using it. But it's been a big concern for people out there with whether it's addiction to technology devices or just spending too much time on whether it's Facebook or Amazon or whatever it is your particular digital vice is. They've set some controls that you can control your phone for yourself or for your family, and just kind of giving you data, which I'm a big fan of data, telling you, you know, how much you have used a certain app or how much you've used, you know, the phone just in general. So lots of good stuff there. I'll be interested to see how that turns out. I know I personally, there have been some updates that are similar. You know, a couple of, I think a year ago, they updated the operating system to basically ignore texts and phone calls while you're driving, and they set that on default.
Okay.
And honestly, I probably wouldn't have turned that on myself had it been an option, but having it turned on default, just I kind of leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was never a big phone user while I drive, but you know, every once in a while you reach for it, something beeps, and now it doesn't do that, so there's no reason to beep for it or reach for it. So that's been a big thing. So I'll be interested to see how this turns out. But yeah, a lot of software updates.
It's weird getting used to. I've got that on my,
sure,
my Android phone,
mm-hmm,
now,
mm-hmm,
and when I'm on, like I was this morning on the motorcycle, obviously you don't want to be grabbing
yeah,
the phone
on the motorcycle,
on the bike.
A whole other deal. Yeah.
It just texts them back and says, hey, I'm on, I'm driving,
mm-hmm,
I'll get back to you as soon as kickstands are down.
Right, for sure.
And people appreciate that. They go, hey, yeah, that's a cool thing.
Absolutely.
Now I know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little weird getting used to, because, again, you hop on, and it just automatically happens. There's no user interaction. I don't say, oh, I'm going to allow this now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at first
you,
I had
you
to.
You can, however, turn that off.
Yes,
actually,
yeah, yeah.
In the iOS in the update for – this is actually an update we're talking about from a year or so ago, but yeah, it's on default on the Apple iPhone, and so you don't actually have, you have to go and turn it off.
Yeah, I had
which
to opt in and everything, yeah, and say it was cool, which was fine, but I don't really plan on ever turning it off, because
yeah,
then I don't have to remember.
You know, that's the funny thing about just consumers in general. You know, you could say the same thing about saving money. If you give people the option, if they have to opt into something, very few people are going, just in general, few people are going to go, hey, I'm going to do that. But if you have to make people opt out of it, that's when you really get a good saturation of users that do it. Because if it's just on and you have to kind of get used to it, you know, maybe it'll bug you for a few, you know, two or three times, and then you'll just kind of forget about it. It'll be new. But, you know, a lot of people, and I've talked about this with John, who's not here today, you know, there are so many features in your mobile device that you use that, you know, people just do updates and they don't even know that there are these new features in. So I really like it when a feature is really good, like this one that we're talking about now, that they just kind of turn it on and make you use it. While I know that frustrates some people out there,
sure,
being able to turn it off fixes that. But if you turn it on, then you can kind of get up, especially a safety feature like we're talking about now, really can you know, improve a lot of people's lives.
Who hasn't heard the hue and cry of, why can't they just leave it alone?
Right, right.
I know my Android phone this morning took a big update, and then when it got all done, it said, hey, your phone, you know, we may have just discharged most of your phone because it got really hot, but here's a couple of features. And it was the, well, I think it was a Windows switch, being able to switch software, Windows, and some other updates for that. But so I appreciate when they actually tell you what the software updates, so you don't have to go digging for it from
right,
a Twitter account or some press release or something. So I actually appreciate the screen after the update that says, this is what we did.
Yeah, I should probably mention that if you've done an update for iOS in the past few years, Apple always puts a quick tips app, usually on the front first page, especially after an update. And you basically have, all you have to do is tap on that, and it will go through some of the major features of the update. And then if you keep doing it, you know, day to day, it will actually go through features you may not know. So
what?
If you've ever looked at your home screen, if you own an iPhone or an iPad, actually, it would be the same thing. But obviously slightly different features. Just on your home screen, Apple has an app called, I'm searching for it because of course I've buried it already. It's just called Tips, I believe, Quick Tips or something like that. Now, of course,
Is this the screen you're talking about?
No. Just, it's called Tips. It's an application from Apple. It looks, shows a little light bulb and it's yellow. You can search for it.
Oh, that
right.
thing.
And I find that very useful. Usually I'm very informed about things, but even I miss things. And, you know, if you do an update, or even if you haven't done an update, if you've got a new phone, just I highly recommend, if you've got a new Apple iPhone, I should say, just hit that tips and go through. It'll probably take you a minute and a half, and you might find a new feature that you didn't know is already built in, or a new way to do things that'll make it easier. So
sure.
I highly recommend that.
Absolutely. Just a quick reminder, we are taking questions today and comments. You can text us, 956-STPB. That's 956-7372, or in the moment at stpb.org, the email address. Don shot us a quick note. Thank you for that, Don. This is RE, the AT&T acquisition. The purchase content favored by AT&T through its internet service, so the loss of net neutrality will affect this. The consumer will be the loser.
Yeah, you know, he's right about that. Although I don't know that that is specifically a negative for this particular merger. I think that's a negative for all content in general.
Right. So, we're drawing some lines.
Yeah.
That...
As a matter of fact, my personal opinion is it will be harder for a company to favor their own content because it will be so obvious that consumers will really notice that and be pretty torqued. As far as I can tell. But I think it'll be what's more insidious and what I'm more afraid of is a deal that maybe say, and I'm not saying they do this, but I'm just going to use them for example, that Netflix makes with Verizon to get a better speed on this content and maybe slow down Hulu speed or something like that. And then that's not as obvious to us. Because there's not going to be an advertisement for that there. So it won't be near as transparent as far as I can tell. So that's the thing I'm more afraid of. He's right about this, that the net neutrality expiring will affect their ability to favor their own content. But I think we've got scarier things than that even coming.
All right, and has AT&T lined up with some others? I know, like, locally in town, Midco has said, we're not going to throttle anything. Don't worry about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they all say that.
Okay, so they all do that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard of anybody saying, well, yeah, we plan to totally throttle this content.
No.
Nobody's going to say that out loud. But, you know, you can say we're not going to throttle content, and then you can go ahead and create all sorts of packages where content might be throttled, and then you're still doing that, but you're not really – you're offering the ability to not throttle content, but you can still say, well, if you have this package – the video package, whatever you want to call it, you have the video package, then you have, you know, free, no speed limits on XX and Y. But if you take our basic package, which, you know, is the one that you took before, then, you know, video might be slower from these companies or might be slower in general. So there are lots of ways you can manipulate subscriptions to things that will allow you to, you know, eke more money out of the consumer and slow down content and this and that, that you can still say, oh, no, we're not throttling content. You know, just this expiring is a big deal, and it's going to hurt. Although I honestly think in the long run, it's going to flip back.
Interesting.
Go ahead,
fact.
Jeff.
Comcast was the very first one to start throttling people and got a court judgment against it. And they're the ones with data caps. As of this week, they have turned all their throttling mechanisms off. And, in fact, they informed everybody that that it hasn't been used for over a year. So what they used to do was when you hit your data cap, if you are a heavy user and their data caps are like 1 terabyte a month, they would actually start throttling you. Over time, they did that less and less, and they've actually it hasn't been used for over a year now, so they actually turn off. So they actually have no mechanism in place to throttle people right now. But they are keeping their data caps in place, so you have to pay more if you exceed them. But that's an interesting kind of omission they did that. They built their network up enough that they no longer need to throttle the heavy people because they can handle it. So interesting times. We'll have to kind of see how it all plays out in the end.
Jeff, what are people doing to use that much data in a month? I mean, I'm assuming a family watching Netflix, doing some gaming, downloading some things from iTunes. It is heavier. I mean, internet usage has gotten heavier. There was an article I wanted to talk about later.
But that's not where, the really heavy users.
Who are?
The heavy users are a lot of people that are doing home-based video solutions. What I mean by that is people have been putting up terabytes of their own video and then sharing it with family and friends. That can drive bandwidth, especially upload, which is more limited on a cable-type modem and more precious in terms of overall health of the network, sky high. A lot of people are doing security cams, which uploads a lot of stuff to the internet. Most of the download stuff, like the Netflix, you don't ever really get tagged with that unless you just turn on Netflix and on a 4K TV and never turn it off. It's more of the users that are doing a lot of sharing, a lot of uploading of stuff, a lot of like the Dish Network where you can watch your TV remotely. A lot of that kind of stuff is what's really driving those humongous bandwidth usages. Now, if you had your own, and I know people that have home servers of 53 terabytes, those are the people that are really driving it. And most of it's video. Them either storing video locally and sharing it with other people or just downloading large amounts of video and sharing it. That's the people that are really the heavy users anymore. That would hit the data caps and hit a lot of this stuff. Even Verizon has a new unlimited, data plan coming out. For $95 a month, you can get 75 gig data caps. So the networks have built up and can now handle the videos, the Netflix, and stuff like that. They used to be a problem. The networks have built up and have solved those problems with caching servers and stuff. The really heavy users are now the home people with big servers.
And they're moving data to the cloud at a regular high rate. So that's interesting. I'm glad I asked that question because one of the things that I was going to talk about I'm going to have to find this because I was going to get to it later today, but there was a media agency, Zenith, the media agency, not the TV set, the quality goes in before the name goes on thing. That was Zenith, right? I'm forgetful today, but they said next year for the first time, people will spend more time using the internet than watching TV. And I imagine a lot of that's watching TV.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's a very skewed statistic there.
According to estimates, again from Zenith, that people on average spend 170 minutes a day, or nearly 3 hours, using the internet, or they will in 2019, which is a tad more than they're expected to be watching TV. So about equal next year in 19, and then of course for the future. Yeah, they said basically distribution of TV signals, newspaper, print, watching videos on the web through platforms like Netflix or YouTube, newspaper websites. That all counts as internet consumption. An average person will spend more, a total of about 8 hours a day consuming media this year is what they forecast. In other parts of the world, TV will remain on top. For now, they forecast media consumption through 2020 and did not expect the internet to overtake TV in Europe, Latin America, and the whole of North America at that time. So the U.S. was projected to surpass TV in the U.S. in 2 years. Time spent on those mm-hmm. things. So, it's all extremely relative and germane to the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see the data behind that. I mean, I'm not saying that it's not true because obviously that's just the way it's going to go. But, you know, you think of your typical gamer who might, you know, spend time playing a online game. You know, that might be 8 hours in a shot, whereas somebody watching, you know, network television, you know, watching 8 hours of network television is like a whole other thing. So, you know, gamers tend to use more internet time than maybe your passive user. So that's part of the statistics that could be skewed. And of course, you know, there are so many, you know, devices that use internet. Even your TiVo is using internet. So you might be watching broadcast TV, but you might flip over and start using internet and you don't even know you're doing it.
So, well, that's what I want to know is binge watching something on BritBox considered internet or television?
I would assume that's considered internet. I mean, I can't imagine it wouldn't be.
Right. An app on your Roku or whatever.
This is an interesting statistic, but it's kind of a non-statistic because I don't think there's anybody that would say otherwise. I mean, I think if you ask somebody, do you think people are going to start using the internet more than TV? I think 10 out of 10 people are going to say yes. I mean, I think that just seems obvious.
Yeah. Another text message came in. In regards to net neutrality in E3, the gaming industry relies heavily on download speeds for patches and simple online play. It seems the public is worried more about streaming services, which is understandable, but this could cripple certain games that are online only, like World of Warcraft, the latest Fortnite. With the AT&T merger, they would get Warner Brothers, which does make games. Anyway, some interesting comments. Wouldn't that be able to put a premium for games because of the other business services? That's kind of what we're talking about.
That's a really good point. You know, we do talk about streaming services when we talk about, you know, prioritizing online content from providers. But 100% right about games. In fact, probably use more data in the long run. Streaming so much high resolution content and downloading, you know, gigantic patches and things like that. So that's absolutely true. And another thing to be wary about.
And that's what Brian's worried about in this text.
And he's rightfully so, I think.
Downloading all those updates and patches. Mm-hmm. Now there's all kinds of, not only are there patches for software, but we're talking about hardware patches
of
now,
course,
too.
Yeah.
And other things.
Yeah, and the gaming market is bigger than the, you know, international TV market, or not TV, but film market. So, I mean, there's more money in games than there is in movies. So, he's absolutely right to bring that up.
For a second there, you're going to say International House of Burgers.
You know, that's a whole other deal.
That's a whole other internet fervor this week. Anyway, we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get to this story from a press release out of Mines about getting that confidence gap up in girls and getting them involved in STEM. I want to talk about that after this quick break. Well, we have traversed into the third half of the show successfully today. Welcome again to In the Moment Tech Radio. Talking with a couple of tech guys here today. Joel Barovalite is here, our resident Mac guru, and Jeff Litterick, our resident, man, security, gaming, networking.
Just guru. Just say guru.
Can we just elevate him to just general guru status?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll do that. He's our bit guru. I'm sure others in his building would agree with that. And if not, I'm going to hear about it after the show.
Right, exactly.
Anyway, thanks, Brian, for your comments on the AT&T and Don about the comments in the AT&T merger. We will continue to follow that. I had one follow-up question before we get into the other news that we want to talk about. But so do you feel, and Jeff, this is a question for you too, that there are enough watchdogs now in the industry between the freedom
FCC?
Yeah, well, no, the having a senior moment.
NGOs, you're talking about people that...
Well, I'm just talking about organizations that are internet watchdogs who will be able to just sort of ferret out any possible net neutrality issues that may be coming down the pike. I was thinking the Internet Freedom...
Alliance,
or whatever that's called. Are there enough nerds out there to watch?
The reason
this?
I don't think there are is because you can't remember their name. I mean, honestly, that says all you really need to say about it. Nobody really knows who to go to make sure that, you know, you're getting what you pay for, and that your internet isn't slower than this person's, or that your content isn't being used in a way that you don't want it to be used. Nobody really knows what to go to. That's why the government doing some of these things is so important, because we do know how to go to the government to do these things. So I'm all for the free market, but when you let the free market do everything, you're going to run into trouble real quick. So I fully expect we're going to run into trouble real quick.
Okay. Jeff, any final parting thoughts?
Just plenty of watchdogs like the EFF and quite
Electronic
a few
Frontier
of them.
Foundation.
That's it.
Right. That
Thanks,
are going
Jeff.
To, and more than that, there's tons, plus normal user stuff. This stuff, if someone does this, this will be reported fairly quickly, almost real time. And it's happened in the past the same way. It will get attention from little groups. Will they be listened to, and will they have any effect to be able to reverse or fix it? That is a totally different question, and probably not. So while we will know these transgressions are happening, we even knew them back in the day when Comcast started throttling BitLocker almost immediately. It still took a couple years to get them to stop, right? And that was when the FCC was on our side. So there's groups to report it. We will know about it. That doesn't mean we can stop it.
Okay. Well, had an interesting press release hit my inbox this week, and I wanted to talk a little bit about it on the show today. There's a lot of folks out there that think the girls are not pursuing STEM fields in adequate numbers, and we've had guests on the show talking about cyber camps and breaker days and things. And they gave some tips that I wanted to pass a couple of them along that parents can do to encourage their daughters to remain open to careers in STEM fields. And so some female scientists, engineers, and staff at South Dakota School of Mines and Technology put together a list of things that are just some tips that they wanted to pass along, and I wanted to pass a few of them along too. You can go, again, either to the Mines website or our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio, and get a link for all of them and to explore the full press release. But the first thing, of course, give your daughter toys that build spatial learning and important skill in engineering fields, like Tinker Toys and Legos and builder kits. So they have... The theory is girls have less spatial skills than boys because the toys they're given as children because of that reason. So an interesting thing. Invite questions. Do you do this with your daughter? Like, you know, why is the sky blue? Why does soda fizz? Do you ask her questions like that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Perfect. You know, I'll let you get through the list, but I definitely have some thoughts on it.
So. Yeah, yeah. So if they don't know the answer, then you work with that. You work with them together to ferret that out, to figure that out, make it fun, mm-hmm. really. Don't be afraid. This would be my number one tip. I don't care the gender of the child. Don't be afraid to get involved with their schooling. For instance, if you know your child's school has an extraordinary physics teacher, go to bat and make sure that your child gets that teacher. So really understand where they're learning and how they're learning and become involved in it. Perfect tip. Remind them that it's okay not to have an A in everything. Inventors and scientists learn by trial and error. Mistakes sometimes lead to great things. That's a hard skill to teach later in life, to not be afraid to fail. And perfect tip. These are well reasoned and thought out, I think.
Absolutely.
Form a STEM club if there isn't one around. And go on nature hikes and identify plants and birds and other things. So if there's a engineering firm in your town, ask for a tour, you know, things like that. So anyway, some great tips from, I thought, the folks at the School of Mines.
Mm-hmm.
Kudos to them. And yeah, check that out if you have small children or grandchildren and want to encourage those activities in their kids.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, I'd add a couple of things to that. First off, I have a daughter, and one thing I make sure to do is I don't try to girl everything up. You let them decide if they want to add sparkles or pink to it. You do not have to have pink Legos for your girl to play with them. All you're doing is telling them, well, here's your special girl Legos, which is honestly, it's totally patronizing to a girl. Now, if that's what they want, that's a whole other thing. But let them decide what they're going to do. Maybe they want to play, you know, a first-person shooter. Maybe they don't want to play, the girly games or whatever it is, or maybe they don't want the special girl engineering set. Just offer them the world and let them choose what they're going to do. And the reverse, I think, is also true, and something we don't talk about nearly enough. We're definitely trying to get more girls into STEM, and I think that's totally worthwhile. But we also need to teach boys that they don't have to be in STEM, and they can go into fields like teaching and nursing, which for some reason we've decided are for women, which is totally backwards. So in order to really get it done, you have to do both. You can't just say, okay, girls, be more like boys. You have to say, be what you want to be, and we're not going to judge you. I mean, that's really where it needs to get.
And I think this list helps.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
If there's any bias in deciding to do different things, that this will help kind of even anything out.
Yeah, and don't decide that because you want them to get into this that you're going to entice them by adding sparkles or, you know, crafts or something. That's not the solution, is to try and trick them into thinking that this is a girl project. It's just a project, whatever it is you're working on.
Plus, getting glitter out of things is just...
Right, that's a whole... Man. Absolutely.
that could be the whole STEM experiment right there. How do we get rid of this glitter?
Glitter, for sure.
Is some sort of a way. Well, we're down to the bare nubbins here on the program. I'm not going to have time for those two studies that I know you're going to find sketchy, but I wanted to get them in anyway. We'll get them to a next show, because they're evergreen enough. But as long as we're in Rapid City with our thoughts, June 25th, I wanted to mention Secretary of the U.S. Air Force Heather Wilson will deliver a major lecture in Rapid City, sponsored by some folks at Dakota State. She'll speak on computers and war, examining the changes brought to warfare by the technology revolution. That's down at the Journey Museum, 7 to 9. Again, June 25th, an opportunity if you want to see a South Dakotan made it big, come back and give a little talk. U.S. Air Force, Secretary of the U.S. Air Force, Heather Wilson, again, delivering that keynote on computers and war. So very interesting down there. And, we're going to be in a new studio next time we talk in a couple of weeks.
Which won't make any difference to you listening. You won't be able to tell the difference.
Unless
you think it'll sound more awesome?
Unless we invite them to come down and participate in our new studio.
Well, that's a whole other
thing. We'll have room for them. And that's a thing of the future here with not only the tech radio part of the show, but with other SDB programming. So we'll be beaming our way from downtown Sioux Falls on the way to Phillipson Falls. Of course, Jeff, you'll be in Pierre. I doubt you'll be catching the governor's plane or anything to come see us in Sioux Falls, but we'll have the technology in place for you to join us again in a couple of weeks. We'll be into July, and I believe, hoping you'll have a great rest of your weekend. Again, Jeff Litterick at the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre. Thank you so much for your time, Jeff. Mm-hmm. And Joel Brovelite, our resident Matt Guru from Sioux Falls, thank you again for your time. I know you have a busy schedule, but you take the time every couple of weeks to come in and talk, and we really appreciate that. So, again, that's all the time we have for you on the show today. SDPB is there for you all the time on the web, sdpb.org, or on the SDPB app on your favorite device. You can listen to our audio streams or get to past news articles or podcasts of shows like this. SDPB.org, and again, have a great weekend.